I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Miracle Voices. This is your co-host, Matt McCabe. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
Doing really well today. How about you?
I'm doing real well, too.
Yay!
And super excited about our guest today, Corinne Zupko. Welcome.
Yay! Hi! I'm so happy to be here, Tam and Matt. Thank you for having me.
Same.
Corinne, where
Thank
are
you? Thank
you
for having us.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm in New Jersey, and it's a gorgeous fall day here.
Oh, good. And are you in, like, northern New Jersey, southern Jersey, where there's devils, right? There's New Jersey devils in the south, is the rumor, right?
And there's now a settled, ongoing debate that there is a central Jersey. It's always been this big debate. Is there just a north or a south? Is there a central? And so I'm, like, central toward the shore area. And we don't have, I've never seen anything remotely close to a Jersey devil, but who knows?
Right. I like that there's this myth of Jersey devils, but they're only in the south. Like,
right,
they don't
right.
venture north. Okay. Well, Corinne, maybe we could just start with you telling us how A Course in Miracles came into your life.
Sure. So my journey with the course has been, I've been a course student for most of my adult life. When I was a college student in the 90s, I had already been struggling with anxiety for a long time. My first psychiatric diagnosis was at the age of about 2, when I was diagnosed with separation anxiety disorder from my mom. And that anxiety sort of morphed and changed over time. Fear, as we know, is a shapeshifter. So although the separation anxiety got better, I had phobias as a kid. When I got to college, which is a time when mental health issues surface for a lot of people, including myself, I broke down with panic attacks because a student in the school, the college that I attended, died very suddenly, and it unraveled me at the seams. I was like, how can a loving God create things that die? That was my question that plagued me for a very long time already at that point. And up until my first panic attack, my mom had been trying to get me to open up this book called A Course in Miracles and take a look. And I literally would plug my ears and say, speak to me in English like you used to. I'm not interested in the spiritual stuff. And it was not until I was literally at my rock bottom on the cold tile floor of my college dormitory bathroom in my very first panic attack, not sure if I was dying or what was happening, when I called home at 3 o'clock in the morning. My mom, by a miracle, picked up the phone, and we figured out that I was having a panic attack because I had just learned that day that that student had passed away. And she said, Corinne, you know, I know you haven't wanted to talk about A Course in Miracles before, but I really think it would help you. Would you be interested? And at that point, I was like, I will try anything. So yes. And I still have my very first copy right here in front of me. I still use it. My mom wrote an inscription in the front that is dated. I think it's, my goodness, it's, my book is literally in pieces, and I refuse to get a new one. January 19th, 1997 is when she gave this to me. And I can't express enough how deeply A Course in Miracles has transformed my life. So that's how it all began.
Wow. January 19th, 1997. Actually, October 19th, 1997, I had my son. So we had big years that year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd say so.
Me too. I had a big year. That's when I sobered up. So that is a meaningful year for you, Corinne, 97. But you also have 12s is a big number for you, right?
It sure is. That's funny that you should bring that up. So, you know, since that time, I have noticed, only in hindsight, that every 12 years, there seems to be some type of major period of undoing or unsettling that I go through, where my previous understanding of the course gets shaken for in some way, shape, or form. And I let go. It's not easy. You know, there's lots of internal earthquakes, so to speak, happening. But then some new experience, some new understanding arises. And I'd say the first, so 12 years after my mom first gave me this book, was when I realized that I had been using the course as a Band-Aid. I would run to it, read something to make myself feel better when I was having anxiety, close it, and move on and just go about the rest of my day. And I wasn't fully, although I was doing what it said to the best of my ability at the time, I wasn't necessarily looking at things with the Holy Spirit. I was kind of like just, you know, tamping down the anxiety and moving on. So I realized, you know, this was probably around like 2009, I think, that I needed to start looking at what was coming up with the Holy Spirit. Otherwise, it was a bypass. And then 12 years after that, which brings me to about, I'm forgetting now which year, I think it was 2021, I went through another major upheaval where I actually had an experience in my backyard of Jesus prompting me to let go of the course, to fully step into his arms, step into a direct relationship. And having had the course as my spiritual foundation for my entire adult life, even just the idea of saying, okay, I let it go was extremely scary. And that was when I started, you know, the course is still very much a part of me, but it was an act of a leap of faith at that point. And what emerged was a much more direct relationship and surprising relationship with the body and the earth in a deeper understanding of it coming from the mind, which is, I guess, the best way that I can sum it up briefly. So it's quite a journey. And I can see too how it's all part of the development of trust. It's all every upheaval, every miracle, every moment is all, there's a carefully planned curriculum that each of us has, and we are guided every step of the way. I can see that so clearly now.
It's interesting. The trial thing is almost very interesting too. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I find it almost funny in a way that ironically funny that, you know, here in the course, it absolutely says, now forget this course and walk with me, holy unto God. And we're like, no, we don't want to forget the course. Forget the course.
I'd rather cling.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing we think connects us to that greater power. You know, it's the bridge. And it's like, okay, blow up the bridge now. Walk away from the bridge.
Right. And that's my friend Uma Sanghvi put it so clearly. She said, A Course in Miracles is an arrow. You know, it's pointing us. We have these lessons. We have the tools. It's pointing us to an experience and that direct relationship. And when she said that, it dropped in that those words just really stuck with me and ring very true for me.
Mm. Wow. That's crazy.
So what is your relationship now? As you said, you were told to let go of the course, but you haven't. I'm confused.
I did at that time. And I said, okay, you know, if this is, I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I said, I'm letting go and I'm trusting you. And what ended up happening were a lot of mystical experiences emerging, experiences with light episodes and angels and feeling a much more, you know, A Course in Miracles doesn't talk about the divine feminine directly, but just really tapping into that sort of energy some more. But I've been brought back to the course in a much deeper way. So I'm doing the lessons right now with a friend. They're coming in on a much deeper level this time. It's my operating system. I mean, it's how I interact with and see the world. So it's very much a part of me. So I've come back to it, you know, but now it's again at another deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Friend, you mentioned you're doing lessons with a friend. You know, that's a powerful way, joining with others to do lessons and readings and stuff. Can you talk about that and how you and your friend are kind of oriented around that?
It's mind-blowing to me because we have both been challenged with some really intense forgiveness opportunities and, you know, different opportunities, but are coming together with a shared intention of practicing forgiveness, really doing what the course is saying in terms of forgiveness, that having someone to join with, to talk about the lessons, talk it over with, and then have that practice period together, because we're actually not every day, but we try most days to actually do at least one practice period together. I focus better. There's an energy there. There's some kind of like synergy that our joining together feels like it's the forgiveness is guaranteed. Like my trust in the forgiveness process has exponentially increased because I happen to be doing these with a friend.
That's wonderful.
It's really powerful. Yeah.
And inspiring.
I mean, it also sounds a little bit too, like, you know, you're keeping each other in check as well. Obviously. Yes. I mean, when we do that, it's a little similar to AA with a sponsor, but you're both on equal level.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're there for each other if you slip. I mean, that's what it's all about in relationships when we use the course for that tool, because we know it's a self-taught system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which kind of means you don't need anyone to do it, mm-hmm. else to right. do it with. And yet it's also all about shift in relationships and coming through relationships. So the work in the world of form with someone else is just an amazing reflection, and it kind of enhances it exponentially. The experience.
It really does. It really does. I never have done the lessons with another person before. So I agree, you don't have to, but if you do have someone who is on the path and motivated and you join together, it's incredibly, incredibly powerful. And just another component that I'll just add is that having the willingness to call out our own egos, to have the trust together, to be transparent with one another, to say, hey, here's how my ego spun out. I had these judgments, this happened. It's a totally different intention than what we would typically think of in the world with like sharing your grievances, which is, you know, going to go in one direction. This right. is with the intention to heal. This is with the intention, the very explicit and clear intention to move through that to get to the other side. So it's incredibly powerful.
Mm. Yeah. Corinne, have you ever seen the Seinfeld episode about Festivus where you call out your grievances? You call out your grievances, but with not with the intention to heal. It's just to say you were wrong to me.
That's opposite a great of that. Episode. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Corinne, we would love to hear your forgiveness story, any forgiveness story you'd love to share.
I was wondering how many of your guests say, I didn't know which one to pick. There's so many, because that was my main, you know, problem, so to speak, in thinking about which one I wanted to share. But then this dropped in very clearly last night. So I want to talk about forgiving anxiety, which, as you can imagine, in that is encompassing both self-forgiveness and forgiving others, because the experience of anxiety and mental health issues is very internal, but we're often triggered, you know, by other people in our relationships. So it's addressing both self-forgiveness and forgiving others. So my story happened some time ago, but it was an incredible story and has really left a lasting impact on me. One of my biggest anxiety triggers was health anxiety, concerns about the body, always thinking there was something wrong with me, running to the doctor, that type of pattern. And just to give a little disclaimer here, anybody listening who has any kind of health anxiety, I promise I'm not going to give too many details because I don't want to trigger anybody, but I was concerned about a physical symptom. So I was going to a doctor to investigate that physical symptom. And it was just simple bruising easily. I always have. I'm clumsy. I bounce into things. I get a bruise. But a doctor was like, well, you can go to a hematologist and get it checked out. So of course, you know, I went that direction. And when I was in the office, I was acutely aware that many of the people in the office were not well. They were there for chemo and other things. And that was at the time very, very unnerving for me. So I had a lot of fear, really, really anxious, really nervous just being around other people who weren't well and, you know, little spun out about my own body. So as I'm, you know, it's a standard practice in that office. Everybody gets like a lab draw. So I'm sitting there and the nurse is, you know, doing the labs and taking the blood, and I'm talking to her and she's asking me, so why are you here? And I tell her, and she goes, well, that's not good. And I was like, well, these are symptoms that I've had my whole life. And she's like, well, that's not good. And then she goes, don't you pass out on me. So guess what I did? I was so anxious and like already so worked up that I had that, you know, that response, that fainting response. And they put my feet up and brought me gummy worms and juice to just, you know, help me through the episode. And from there, after seeing the doctor, I had to go for even more extensive lab work because, of course, they have their standard way of doing things. And this time I had to actually go to a hospital to get the lab draw, which I was not happy about. So I could have stayed in a lot of anger and a lot of judgment toward that nurse for saying the wrong things to an anxious patient. You know, like we're really sensitive. We're very sensitive to what people say and suggest. And I want to be clear, I felt my feelings. I did not bypass them. I think it's really important that when something happens, we allow ourselves to feel what's coming up. But again, it's with the intention of moving through it, creating an open space after we feel our feelings to be, you know, calling on the Holy Spirit. So although I was so anxious about having to continue on for this lab work, I was determined to practice forgiveness. I was determined to be kind to myself because I could see myself at this point. I knew my pattern. I knew how triggering health fears were for me. And my practice of self-forgiveness has always been focused on allowing myself to be where I am. So rather than judging myself, because the Course says, you know, we might judge our greatest advances as failures and our deepest retreats as success. Like we have no idea how we're doing. I was determined to just not judge myself, to allow myself to be where I was, to recognize that I'm going through fear right now. It's okay. I don't need to beat myself up and make it worse. So I'm working that the whole time. And I'm also working this experience of feeling really angry at this nurse for, you know, what happened, but still being willing to see differently, to experience a miracle, and recognizing that, you know, if I wasn't in fear already, she probably wouldn't have triggered me. Like if I had to look at it as, what is this situation showing me that I believe? Like, what is it in me that is reacting to this? What is it in me that needs healing? And obviously, it was a lack of trust. It was a lot of fear. It was believing I'm a body. It was all of those above things. So I'm looking at what that interaction is bringing up in me. And I'm just like showing up to the Holy Spirit's feet and I'm saying, help, take this. I really want to call forth witnesses to love this time. You know, when I have to go back to this hospital to get the second round, I really want to call forth witnesses to love. And so I was, you know, again, working both sides, working on self-forgiveness, working on forgiving that nurse, being willing to see differently because, you know, that nurse was a witness. She rose to the occasion of being a fearful witness because that's what I was tuned into at that time. That's what I was calling forth. So fast forward, I show up to this, you know, the hospital outpatient wing and have to go get the lab draw. And I'm still really nervous, but I am determined. I remember sitting in the car before going in, saying to myself, I'm willing to call forth witnesses to love. I'm willing to call forth witnesses to love. I want a miracle. I want to have a good experience. Like I'm in fear still and I see it, but I'm also willing to recognize that this is somehow coming from me, from my, you know, my sleeping split mind. So I walk into the clinic, still really nervous. And behind the desk, turns out the woman who greets me is the mom of one of my college roommates. So I was like so excited to see her and she was excited to see me. And I didn't remember that she worked there. And because she was behind the desk, I figured that was what her job was there. I didn't realize that she was the nurse who would be doing my lab draw. So she took me in the back and as she was doing it, you know, we're chatting and just catching up, and she's telling me about my college, you know, one of my college roommates, her daughter and her kids. And it was totally easy, you know, no problem whatsoever. But here's the part that blew me away. As I was leaving, as it was all said and done, I'm walking out the door and she stops me and she says, Corinne, she's like, you know, this is quite remarkable. She's like, but I just want to let you know, I never work on Mondays. It was a Monday. She said, I got called in 30 minutes before you arrived. And I still get goosebumps telling this story because I just felt, I mean, maybe this all, the same thing would have happened even if I wasn't engaging in the Course's forgiveness, but it just was such a affirmation to me that when we are doing this work, when we're doing this work with the Holy Spirit, that we will have experiences in the world that show us that we're the dreamer of the dream, that miracles are real, that we're not walking alone. There's that Course quote that I love. If you knew who walks beside you on the way that you have chosen, fear would be impossible. And that quote for me has always been kind of one of those core quotes that I've hung on to, that like, I want to know who walks with me. You know, I've had such a high degree of fear in a large part of my life that I want to know who walks with me. And so what's happened over time, now this pattern, this health anxiety pattern, although I still can see a residue of it now, I'm in such a different place. You know, it's so different now after having been a Course student for so long, you know, going through whatever I've needed to go through in terms of my lessons, but I can look at it all now and see, as I said before, looking back, this is all part of the development of trust. Like every experience, every fearful experience that I've mostly self-created, those experiences have shown me that there's something in me that I can trust. It's a shared part of our mind. You know, the Holy Spirit is in all of us. And when I'm coming from that place of the Holy Spirit in me, it touches the Holy Spirit in the minds of others. And you have those experiences then reflected back to you. And so that development of trust to me, you know, has been everything in my journey. And I just want to add that my mom has, since she was the one that introduced me to the Course, she and I, you know, I've learned so much from her. And she always taught me that forgiveness is for giving to the Holy Spirit. It's whatever the situation is, it's for the giving to the Holy Spirit. That Corinne herself, my body's eyes, doesn't know how to see past bodies. I don't know how to see past form. I can't do that of Corinne. But there's something in me that if I turn to that in me, the Holy Spirit in me, and learn how to see out from that place, that's when these miracles happen. And the Holy Spirit does just so much for us. I wanted to bring this in too, and maybe I'll hold off for a minute because I just want to see if you have anything that you want to add before I share this. But I'm just always being very intentional about centering the Holy Spirit in my forgiveness work, because I'm so clear that if it's just Corinne, if it's just me trying to do it, I'm probably going to make a mess of things. So, I'll keep sharing in a minute, but I just want to see if you've had anything you wanted to share.
I have a question.
Sure.
In your experience with the first nurse, after you came to, did you express or share with her what her feedback prompted in you?
No. At that moment, no. Because I was in a state of just so much distress and feeling a bit unraveled. I think I said something to the doctor when I went into the doctor's office, but I hadn't in that moment to the nurse. I don't know if that would have been helpful feedback for her. maybe it would have been.
I kind of can't imagine that it wouldn't have. I mean, mm-hmm. whether she liked it or not is a question or welcome.
Well, but she also had the evidence of me, you know, pretty much passing out right after she said that. So my hope is that like, you know, there would have been enough self-awareness there to think like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Very, very possibly not.
Right. You know? Right.
And I just wondered, because we do all this work on ourselves, and is there a responsibility at all to say, to help someone else see something or not, or actually just view it when the healing happens, it happens for everyone. And then my follow up in that was, did the second nurse who you knew, did you tell her about your experience with the first nurse?
So no, I did not. So she knew nothing of that. Mm-hmm. Nothing whatsoever. And to go back to your question about like, do we say something? Do we have a responsibility in that moment? To me, it always comes back to asking the Holy Spirit, because I think we can't make a blanket generalization in terms of what to do. I think in any given moment, we have to turn within. We have to ask, am I to say something right now? Am I to not say something? But what is often wrapped in that, which I will speak for myself, is that I've also had patterns of people pleasing, not wanting to rock the boat, not wanting to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, that's been sort of wrapped up in there for me. And to give one other really quick example my dad's totally fine that I'm talking about this, because I actually wrote about this in my book, but for a long time, I had a very hard time speaking up to my dad. I just didn't want to do it. I had some issues and anger that I was hanging on to. You know, my parents divorced when I was in college. And I, in my trying to develop a relationship directly with my dad, because before then it was, kind of a different dynamic when they were married and we were all living in the same house. I had to learn how to speak up to him. So I was trying to give my upset to the Holy Spirit. I'd say, Holy Spirit, mad at my dad, please take this from me. Don't want to feel this. I'm handing it over for years, and nothing is budging. Nothing is changing, because I had to learn. What dropped in one day was that one of my lessons currently back then was to learn how to use my voice, was to learn how to speak up, was to let go of the people pleasing, let go of the need to be the peacemaker, and learn how to speak from guidance. And that might be feedback that somebody doesn't necessarily want to hear. So I did speak up to my dad, and it was really wonderful to find my voice in that relationship and to be able to, you know, use that and actually see how that translated to other areas of my life too. So that's the kind of long-winded answer, is that I think we always need to ask, and there absolutely are times when we will be guided, and I have been guided to say something and to give somebody feedback, because otherwise, how would they know? It can be really hard at times to see ourselves. We all have blind spots. It can be really hard to see our blind spots. And so I think giving feedback, again, is something that we all have to stay open to, but it all depends on what we're guided to do in that moment.
Yeah. Good. Really great answer. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Or at least I think it is.
Corinne, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You know, as you were talking about your story there in the doctor's office and the drawing the blood, I was thinking about that section in the manual for teachers, the shift in perception, which it says special agents seem to be ministering to him, yet, but they give form to his own choice. He chooses them in order to bring tangible form to his desires. And so it's like, hey, I'm not desiring this, but at some level we are, because we think we're guilty. And then the second go around with your roommate's mom is that you asked for that shift in perception and something changed there, and you had a different minister that it seemed to appear to you. I mean, it just seemed like that was a classic example of that.
That's a perfect. I love that you brought that in from the manual. That's awesome.
Yeah. Wow.
They're absolutely special agents.
Now, does your ego ever try to talk you out of it? Like, that was just a coincidence. Like, oh, that just happened.
Oh, like, sure. I, you know, the Course says doubt will come and go to come again. But So I've been in doubt, and I'll let myself doubt. Like I almost think that I was my friend who I'm doing the lessons with. I was telling her just the other day, I was having some doubts come up, and she's like, Corinne, you know, I think it's actually healthy because you're not just taking in, you know, we should doubt. One of the examples that she gave is that if you don't doubt, like you could end up in a cult, you know, like if you're following what other people are saying. So, but the thing is, like, when I have doubt, there's also part of me that's just laughing because I know I've had so many experiences at this point that point to the truth that it's like, I can almost sort of just watch the ego mind, you know, have its doubts and then be like, okay, and, you know, come back to the here and now. So if I have doubts come up, I let myself feel them. And I was listening to, oh, I can't remember the speaker, but they said that skepticism, the definition of it, and I don't have the exact words handy, but it was really just skepticism is refusing to come to a conclusion, like just not jumping to a conclusion. And I love that because that actually speaks to the open-mindedness that we can have as teachers of God to just keep our minds open rather than thinking we know. If Corinne thinks she knows the way to forgive, or if Corinne thinks she knows what the Course says, in a sense, I could be putting up a block or a limit to the Course revealing to me something that I haven't yet seen. So I really have sort of embraced this idea of just really having as much open-mindedness as possible to be shown and not decide that I think, you know, that I know the way, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I would say, I mean, skepticism, we usually see with a true negative power to
right.
it.
Right.
There can be a stubbornness in skepticism. I mean, its definition is doubt as to the truth of something. And I think what you're touching on is very much always look into your own authority. If you hear something from a teacher and it resonates, you know that's part of your truth and you follow it. And if you hear something that doesn't, then follow that too. Because if it doesn't, it's not for you. It doesn't mean it may not be, you know, it doesn't mean that it isn't for you later. You might fall upon and go, oh, now that feels true to me. But at the time along your own path, you have to be your own authority.
I love that.
And really listen to what, because all of our paths are different. And, you know, we have so many stories and so many narratives, even though there is that one truth that we all go to, how we get there is can be very different.
Yeah. And that's
timing too. Is orchestrated.
So, it sure is.
Yes. Yeah, so our realizations that even if we completely don't believe something, but then believe it at the time where you wake up to that truth, it's meant for that time and not this. And you have to keep following your own, or you're following someone else's path and it gets very diffused. And I remember I had a friend who liked certain things that I said, and she would say them to her children, but she wouldn't have learned it. Mm. So she was just mimicking, and her children would get really pissed off at her because it didn't feel like it was authentic to her, what she was saying. And I think that matters. We have to walk with deep authenticity to what our own line of truth is along our path to a greater truth.
We sure do. I so resonate with that, Tam. Thank you so much. And it just calls to mind how the Course says that the curriculum is highly individualized. That means that one Course student's path is not going to look the same as another Course student's path. And I also just really resonate with what you said about the timing being completely orchestrated as well, because it absolutely is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's my experience.
So. When you get into a state of like, you just fall into total ego storm and it feels real and denying and projecting is happening. And it's like, I understand the Course, but I'm throwing it against the wall here and I'm going into a full rage here. Eckhart Tolle would call it maybe the pain body. Is there anything you do practically to get back on track when that happens?
I sure do. I love this question. So the ego storm, when that happens for me, I do something that I call journal dumping. So I will get my journal. And by the way, if anybody actually ever read my journal, they would probably think I was the most miserable person in the world because I only use it when I need to get through an ego storm. So I use my journal as a tool. It's not like a documenting of, hey, this happened today. It's a tool for me. So what I do with journal dumping is literally write out every fear that I can identify. So if I'm in anxiety, let's say, I would write out everything that I'm currently worried about that might happen. If I'm struggling with a relationship concern, I might write out my judgments. I might write out my desired outcome. I might write out how this person is wrong, you know, how I think I'm right. I'm literally going to get out the ego. I'm going to get it out onto paper so it's not swirling around in my head. And from there, that's about clearing a space in my mind for the Holy Spirit to enter. So I've found through time, through my own journey, that calling in the Holy Spirit when I'm like in the midst of the storm can be helpful, but I also need to do this, like, you know, how the Course almost talks about it. It does talk about purification being necessary first. This is like a process that I do for purification. I'm going to get out the ego onto paper, get it out of my mind. And from there, when I feel like I've emptied myself, like literally emptied myself of every judgment, thought, fear, thought that I can think of, when I feel like I've created a space in my mind and cleared out that space in my mind, that's when I can start to like be so willing to see differently. That's when I can really say, Holy Spirit, like I give all of this to you. I'm not hanging on to anything. And what I wanted to bring in, what I referenced before, which is actually perfect timing to bring it in now, is that I also have compiled, so I love the Foundation's web edition on the, you know, on the internet, the web edition of A Course in Miracles. And what I felt moved to do one day, because I'm not currently teaching a Course in Miracles study group, but I did for over 10 years. And I found myself always emphasizing the things that the Holy Spirit does for us. So one day I got this guidance to go to the web edition and type in for us. And what came up were many, many, many references, you know, with the word, with the phrase for us. And I combed through those references and I pulled out all of the quotes, most of the quotes about what the Holy Spirit does for us or what Jesus does for us. And I actually wrote this as a list on my website, and it has like a version of a downloadable PDF, because when you read these quotes one after the other, it just like you feel like you can just lay back into the Holy Spirit's arms and just float. So can I just, I won't read all the quotes. There's a lot of them, but can I, but what I did was write out the things that the Holy Spirit does for us that is directly from these quotes. And could I just read a few of these just to give a quick snippet of how powerful this is? So first of all, I have a quote here that says, it's very hard for you to realize it is not personally insulting that your contribution and the Holy Spirit's are so extremely disproportionate. So listen to all the things that the Holy Spirit does for us. The Holy Spirit undoes error for us, decides for God for us, removes illusions or hallucinations from our mind for us, keeps error unreal for us, knows our value for us, remembers God's will for us, interprets for us, accomplishes for us, awoke for us, remembers for us, judges for us, sees for us, and the list goes on and on and on. So I have these actual quotes, you know, listed out on this blog post. And it's, if anybody's interested in reading this, it's from anxietytolove.com/for-us. FOR-US. And when I have journal dumped and gotten it all out and feel that empty, open clearing in my mind, I've actually read through this list because, as I said already, it gives me the sense of this, like just laying back in the Holy Spirit's arms and floating and just trusting and recognizing that I can release everything that I just got out. So that's been a really, really helpful tool for me to use to work through those ego storms.
Well, that is great. I like that. Yeah. Very helpful.
Well, and then, thank you for the Web Edition. I couldn't have done it without that.
I love the Web Edition too, especially how when you highlight something and copy it, it references where exactly to find that. It'll take
you
there.
That's the best part. Yes.
I love that.
Very kind. Worked hard on that one.
That is great. That is great. And so I'm thinking, Corinne, you know, I don't always experience these things that you know, Holy Spirit can do for me. And so at the very top of my A Course in Miracles journal, I have this little quote I wrote down that says, "Be not concerned with anything except your willingness to have this be accomplished. He will accomplish it, not you." So the only part we have to give here is our willingness, and then all this is done for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's it. Our willingness is key. That's the absolute.
Except I will say here, really important. You only need a little willingness.
A little. A tiny bit.
A tiny
speck.
A pinhole of willingness will get you there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Corinne,
it's
come to the point in the interview where we get to hear your comfort food. What is it?
Oh, yay. So I have three. I'm sorry, I couldn't pick
three.
One.
Go ahead. Yes.
It all relates to the fruit that I actually am growing in my yard. So it would be peach cobbler because I have two peach trees and I could tell you forgiveness stories that I've had to go through when the squirrels knock off all the peaches and I don't get any in a season, but peach cobbler, mulberry pie. I have a magnificent mulberry tree that's really old and just dumps thousands of berries every spring, and blueberry crisp or like a blueberry crumble. Although we haven't done that great with growing blueberries. We have grown some, and then I usually just have to supplement with, you know, some that I buy from the store, but I'm all about the fruit right now.
Yum. Oh, you're about the crisps too.
Yeah. Crumbles and the crisps. What's the difference between a crumble and a crisp?
To me, it's all the same. It's whatever your topping is, whether it's like oats and maybe some flour with some type of butter, and you just, you know, mix it all up and put it on the top, and then it gets nice and toasty when you pop it in the oven. Good.
And a fresh peach that's perfectly ripe is almost like a religious experience. I remember the first time I had one in North Carolina that was like perfectly ripe. And I was just like, I've never tasted one like this before. And then I recognized that there was the Allman Brothers actually named an album just from the experience of, it's called Eat a Peach. And I was like, yes. It's like, it's really, there is something about it when it's in that small window of perfect ripeness.
It's so funny to me that you just said that, because I literally said similar words to my husband, you know, a couple weeks ago when we had them. I was like, this is like an experience of heaven. Like, you know, oh, it's so good.
Well, I just want to tell you that according to Google, the difference between a crumble and a crisp is that a crumble is just a crisp without oats in the streusel.
It's streusel. Like, what's a streusel?
Topping rarely includes oats or nuts.
Okay.
That's the difference.
Now we know. Thank you.
I'm glad you got that cleared up.
Yeah.
Really. Like TAM GPT
is more like streusel made with flour, sugar, and butter.
Oh. Yum.
Just so you know.
Corinne, before we let you go, please tell us how listeners can find your website, your podcast, your books, all these things.
Yeah, thank you. So my website is the same as my book title, which is FromAnxietyToLove.com. And my podcast, also called From Anxiety to Love, is available on all the podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, and I have it on YouTube also. So the book is also sold, you know, anywhere that books are sold. And the book, I will just say, is really the outcome of having been working course principles, you know, for a long time, and really sharing all the teachings that were super helpful to me in healing. Our dear friend, the late Dr. Bob Rosenthal, I think it was the last book that he wrote the foreword to my book. I think it was the last one he did before he became co-president of the FIP. So that's so special to me that I have his words in my book. But yeah, I've gotten feedback that it's really helpful. So that's how folks can reach me. And I hang out mostly on Instagram, I'd say.
Okay. And what's your Instagram handle, From Anxiety to Love?
That's actually Corinne Zupko. So my name, one R, two N's.
Okay. Well, Corinne, thanks so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. Please enjoy all these cobblers for us. And we look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Tam. I loved being with you both.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."